Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1194.ex2116, certificate number 37084, Soviet Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus.
This is our first time the word Soviet has appeared in a omnibus entry title, I think.
Can that be true?
Yeah, I don't see it. But and it's Soviet, not Soviet, because I'm the one typing it in today.
Right.
You missed your chance. You can say Soviet, but
what are you going to do?
Well, for the record, do you feel like it's the word is spelled Soviet but pronounced Soviet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's like a salmon. It's a salmon. But it's not a letter you don't pronounce. It's a missing letter you do pronounce.
Yeah, what would be the So it's the opposite of a silent letter. It's a noisy non-letter.
Yeah, there surely are those. Are there those?
A word where you just drop in a new letter that's not in the orthography.
Yeah, it's like Worcester sauce.
No, that's the opposite. Yeah, that's silent stuff.
Oh, right. It's like Worcester sauce.
it's like that sauce that doesn't
exist. Well,
wait,
Edinburgh, and we say Edinburgh, but I guess it's those letters are in there. We just say them.
I mean, there is a Where'd the come from? There's no U.
What about aluminium? Isn't there
No, they spell it aluminium.
They do?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They think we're crazy.
But we spell it the way we say it, so how crazy is that?
Well, we both spell it the way we respectively say it.
Well, yeah, but they spell it wrong.
They might have invented it, so...
What? They invented aluminum?
Yeah, we were just putting tinfoil on our houses, and they were like, no.
I don't believe that's true. I think there was a turn in the road of history where England and Europe stopped inventing things, and we just invented everything.
Yeah, but aluminum came in under the wire before that.
Dang it.
John, do you like Roman gladiator movies?
Do I?
I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
I don't. I have to say, of all the genres of movies I'm very open to, like those sword and sandal epics of the... of the mid-20th century, maybe interest me the least.
Well, how do you feel about Russell Crowe's Gladiator?
Didn't like it when it came out.
Is that right?
I didn't.
How do you compare it to the one where Mel Gibson paints his face blue and goes, arg?
I guess I liked Braveheart more, and really? I don't know if I can articulate why.
I don't think evidence supports that conclusion now. If you watch both movies in a film festival tomorrow,
that's a pretty big if, because I have not seen either one since it came out.
I think you'll find that Braveheart is more cringy than Gladiator.
Braveheart has the homophobic stuff. You know, at least Gladiator is directed by Ridley Scott and not by a psychopath.
Well, yeah, and it's got a lot of Mel Gibson like making arg face,
right?
Whereas Russell Crowe keeps his arg to a minimum. He's more of a stoic.
He's stroking the wheat.
Yeah, that's right.
Here's what he likes to do. He likes to walk by something and stroke it.
When his wife is killed by the Roman legions.
Spoiler alert for the first 5 minutes of a 1999 movie.
He reacts with a lot of passion, so much so that he has like boogers.
Is that what you like when action stars have boogers?
Well, it was one of those where he was acting so hard that he produced like a runny nose with his acting. And Ridley Scott was like, don't cut it. Don't cut. That's the shot, the runny nose shot. And that's how you know it's an Oscar-winning movie.
Do you think it was method, or do you think he actually...
had a runny nose?
He actually had a runny nose. Or maybe he can, like, and it's the same way that Laurence Olivier could feign scorn or anger or delight without actually being scornful, angry, delighted, because he was such a great actor.
Yes.
Can Russell Crowe just make his nose run? Or does he have to like get in a headspace where he's like, my nose is running?
Yeah, I bet he was thinking, what if my real Spanish wife died and was killed by the Romans in a gruesome way? Whereas Mel Gibson would never include a shot of his nose running in agony, because he's too busy going arg,
too manly.
I don't know. You know, I'm saying
Mel Gibson's idea of
manliness.
Mel Gibson's idea of toxic masculinity includes roaring at the Picts, but not
showing vulnerability
or boogers
like Russell Crowe does, although he never shows any emotion in that movie. Anyway, I do. How do you feel about Master and Commander?
There's something specific to me about
Gladiators.
Antiquity that bores me. Like, whoa. Napoleonic War, sure. Even Robert the Bruce, love it all.
Did you watch that latest Napoleon movie?
No.
It was tedious.
It's on Apple TV now. I could watch it anytime.
I mean, watch it. Go ahead. I was on an airplane, and that usually means I will like almost anything. But this one, I was like, come on, my God, enough.
Well, they don't really make a lot of those kind of sword and sandal kind of epics anymore, right? I mean, Gladiator 2 is about to come out, but that's...
Is it?
Yeah.
Who does it star?
All your favorites from the original. Oh, no, they're all dead. Connie Nielsen. She's the only one who survived.
Wow. Okay. Gladiator 2, Electric Boogaloo. I'm not sure how I feel about that. You were saying that the new Beetlejuice movie is good.
They should have called Gladiator 2 Gladiator Gladiator.
Why doesn't it Absalom Absalom?
If you say Gladiator twice, Russell Crowe's ghost will appear. What if Russell Crowe has some cameo like, like Obi-Wan? So like fat, what's Gladiator's name? Fat Gladiator appears.
Fat Gladiator
appears.
As a ghost, a force ghost.
It's like, there's much more abundant eats here in the afterlife. I need you to rise up against Rome.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I guess I haven't seen enough like...
Have you seen Ben-Hur?
I've seen Ben-Hur. I've seen Spartacus. And I guess I lump them all in as like sort of sub Lawrence of Arabia's.
Yes, I think.
I feel like you and I both love Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, yeah, like I love a good historical epic, but something about if it's got togas, I'm just like, no. Come on. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I've just been conditioned to meet.
How do you feel about the movie Airplane?
Have you ever seen a grown man naked? I mean, to us, Gladiator movies are... I mean, they're maybe the cheesiest genre, just kind of what the culture thinks about them, but they're also kind of conservative coded.
Oh.
Like they often have Charlton Heston. There's often a biblical text or subtext, like at the end of The Robe, where the whole thing is about, someone discovering our Lord. The story of Spartacus is a little bit different, I recently discovered.
He's a real rebel.
He's a real rebel, with or without a cause, we can discuss.
He's a loner, Dottie.
About 100, he was not a loner, in fact. He led a movement.
Right, Right.
I mean, maybe in the ring.
He was the Caesar Chavez against the tiger. Of his day.
That's right. Born, we don't even know his dates because there are no contemporary accounts of Spartacus.
What?
Nobody wrote a century after his lifetime, we have Pluto and Appian's accounts.
No.
Mostly as he's the bad guy in the profile of the general he's fighting. So we assume he was born sometime around 105, 110 BC.
There's no like hieroglyphic of him somewhere. It's like King David, where the only real evidence they have is like a glyph.
I mean, 100 years is pretty good for that. I mean,
yeah,
for something thousands of years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, today it would be weird if like we were just hearing about, like, I'm the first guy to write about some newsmaker of the 20s. Like, hey, does anybody want to hear about Lenin? Anyone want to hear about Calvin Coolidge?
I want to hear about Calvin Coolidge?
Yes, please.
Pull up a chair.
And the accounts kind of differ. Like, we're going to get a vague constellation of ideas about Spartacus based on what these secondhand historians a century or more later were thinking about him. Everyone tends to agree he was from Thrace.
Yep. Yep.
Which would be
all the great ones are.
Yeah, today we would say Bulgaria, but that sounds less cool to be like, yeah, Spartacus was Bulgarian.
Sounds less cool to us, but not to a Bulgarian.
To Bulgarians, like 10 times as cool.
Yeah.
That would be, northern Greece, I guess Albania, Bulgaria, somewhere in that region.
We forget about how much the Balkans were part of the ancient world.
Oh, man.
And not really thought of as like the Balkans.
Yeah, they were. I mean, to the Romans, that was
where it all went down.
Yeah, but it was like barbarian country up there.
Well, yeah, north of Sarmagezatusa. Sarmagezatusa.
Once you're south of Sarmagezatusa, the Romans are like, they gave us democracy and the cone and the cylinder. We love them, but don't go north of Sarmagezatusa. What did you say?
Sarmagezatusa. Sarmagezatusa.
Because there they all have weird tattoos and beards, and they go in the forest. They're all Mel Gibson up there. From his later military acumen, it's usually assumed that he had some kind of military background. Was he a Roman soldier who deserted? Was he some kind of mercenary? But ever the story kind of converges on him being imprisoned by Rome and sold into slavery, trained as a gladiator slave.
It's the Russell Crowe story.
Yeah, Russell Crowe is just rebranding the Spartacus story. Is Russell Crowe's character in that movie even historical? I don't even know.
No.
What's his name? Commodus.
Commodus.
No, that's the emperor. The emperor is Commodus.
Commodus.
And his name is...
Russell Crowe.
Marcellus.
I should know this because it's the kind of thing that men my age sit around cafes and talk about.
I mean, I can quote all the dialogue from Master and Commander. Why can't I remember this guy's name? Is it an S? So Scorpionus.
Let's see. If I put in Russell Crowe Gladiator, it's going to give me ads for all the new Gladiator. It's Maximus.
Maximus. There we go.
Maximus, of course. So no, I don't think. I mean, Marcus Aurelius is in that movie, and he's real.
Harris is a real guy.
But yeah, that's right. But Maximus, I think, is just a fake Spartacus.
Off-brand, store brand Spartacus. Yeah. Who likes to rub his hand over wheat?
He does. He was a military man. Cast out.
Yes. And so there's something of that in Spartacus's origin. But really the story picks up with him as a slave and his origins are kind of vague. And, you know, nobody ever comments about this because, you know, in the period writings, because slavery was just a huge accepted part of the Roman Empire. So nobody's debating it or its implications. That was just the basis of their culture was equality is the exception.
It was the basis of all human culture.
The fact that in Rome, in particular, I think the contrast between the free and the non-free is what gave
the free
gave their dignity and their validity is one of the few.
It's why they could paint all those vases.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so they're used to this kind of servitude it surrounds them. It's traditional. It means they have you probably have a live-in maid and a field hand basically if you're above a certain status. And these people have no rights whatsoever, lower than freed criminals. Nearly all are prisoners of war.
That's right. From Thrace. They're all from above Sarmazegatusa.
Yeah, I was going to say Celts and Gauls, but no, Celts and Gauls.
Celts and Gauls.
Celts and Gauls just coming out of
This is even pre-Slavs, right? No. There were Slavs around.
They were, maybe were they called something else? They were called...
Proto-Slavs.
Yeah, they were Proto-Slavs. They were kind of congealing up in the mountains up there, up in the Carpathians somewhere.
Yeah, what they were Goths and Visigoths.
Slavs and Visislavs. Mm. Celts and Visicelts. Calcs and Visicalcs.
No, the Slavs weren't there yet. The Slavs were still off in Slavitude.
In Slavovia?
Yeah.
In Slavitude. So... Yeah, so like a single war, suddenly you got 75,000 new slaves, and this is what really powers the Roman economy. Like many economic booms throughout mm-hmm. history, could not have been done without forced labor. Spartacus is one of these guys, and his story gets interesting in 73 BC when he, fed up apparently with his gladiatorial pursuits and the dangers and strictures of that life, he leads a big revolt. Some of his fellow slaves, they you know... Problem with gladiators is you give them short swords and shields.
Yeah, that's right.
That, as we learn in the movie Gladiator.
They sure do, and they train them, you know, they make them do push-ups.
Hey, stuff. This is how you kill a tiger and
somebody else.
Jimon Hunsu.
Yeah, a Visigoth.
Yeah, and then Jimon Hunsu. And these guys, you know, they have weapons, they grab kitchen implements, they force their way out of the slave quarters by night and kind of spend a little bit of time plundering the region around Capua, kind of, they're now bandits
also a living thing by that's their wits. Really, we've lost
plundering.
A lot of plundering.
So yeah. Plundering a whole region.
Yeah, plundering, banditry, even
living by your wits now is I don't even know what day trading.
Well, you get an everyday carry bag that's got Q-tips and mints in it.
So it's a small group. It's less than 100 men. And this all works for them because the Roman legions are away at war on two fronts.
That's when to do it.
They're off in Hispania fighting, you know, putting down Hispanians.
That's a long way away.
And then they're doing something in the Mediterranean. The Mithridatic War is going on. So anyway, when the cat's away, Spartacus will play. And they cleverly hole up near Mount Vesuvius, where they've got, you know, some cliffs behind them.
Sure. Smart.
Hard
smart
to smoke them out. They are besieged by Roman soldiers, but actually... Is this in the Kubrick movie? I can't remember. There's a dramatic raid where they scale down the volcano on ropes to counter raid the siege and win a daring outmanned defeat against Roman legions.
Are you sure that's not Force 10 at Navarone?
The second I said it, I was like, I think this is one of the Navarone movies.
Yeah.
But of course, in a culture where slavery is so prevalent, that means... Slave uprisings are always a danger to the man.
They have
who lives in fear of them.
They have a response team for that, a SEAL Team 4.
Well, not enough because they're outnumbered by these slaves. And once Spartacus and co. Become a burr in the Roman saddle, it's very easy to win new sword arms to their cause. You know,
yeah.
Thousands and thousands of slaves in that region in southern Italy start rising up and joining Spartacus's. Now it's a revolt, and
boy, those sound like fun days. Those early days, where it's like, hey,
I mean, it balloons from under 100 people to like 70,000 people under Spartacus's command.
Pretty fun, although then you got supply chain issues.
That's what I'm thinking. Spartacus is not a logistics guy, no. Right?
How do you get milk to all those people?
Exactly. 70,000 glasses of milk. It starts as a slave uprising and ends as a war. It becomes what the Romans called the Third Servile War because this had happened twice in Sicily in recent memory. This is the only one of these that actually hit the Italian peninsula, which is a little scarier if you're...
If you're biggest dickus.
If you're sitting in Rome with a goblet of something, you know, if Sicily falls, you're like, we're probably okay. But this becomes very scary to the people in Rome. And at some point, one Marcus Licinius Crassus, a statesman who is also the wealthiest man in Rome at that time, just so the symbolism is better, he becomes a general and marches out at the head of many legions.
Oh, you're saying this is all... Potentially apocryphal. You think that the wealthiest man in Rome also is recruited to this job?
I mean, this is only 100 years later, and this is, I think it's Pluto. Did I say Pluto? Plutarch. I think I said Pluto before.
Yeah, Plutarch.
The dog, Pluto, was writing this. And I think it's Plutarch writing about the life of this guy, this general, Crassus.
I see. He's the hero of the story, of Plutarch's story.
But it just seems almost too perfect that you've got this uprising of the lowest of the low, these people without rights. And who marches in? Rome's richest man, yeah, who has just been named a general because nobody else wants to deal with this
problem.
That's
why we can't tax the rich.
He's got the confidence of an Elon Musk or a Zuckerberg. Like, these glasses don't look dumb. I can lead 8 Roman legions.
Thank goodness we don't tax their capital gains. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it helps us put down slave revolts. That's exactly. That's the main reason we don't do it. Probably.
Which do you want, Elon Musk controlling the world or a bunch of angry slaves?
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So he actually revives the ancient Roman military practice of decimation.
Whoa.
Which I guess I had never understood. I thought it was like where you're so mean you kill 1 out of every 10 enemies or prisoners. No, decimation is like...
You kill all 10 of the 10 enemies?
No, you kill 1 out of every 10 of your men. Like
your men?
Yeah, that's how... It's kind of like the Jack Welch corporate practice of like, yeah, there's going to be a performance review. You need to get rid of 1/10 of your team every fiscal year. But they would just, you know, every cohort or whatever would pick their worst guy out of 10 and execute him.
Whoa.
So a lot of pressure to perform in Crassus's army.
Oh, I see. It's like some kind of corporate motivator.
That's exactly right.
Dang.
First prize, a set of steak knives.
Second prize.
10th prize, you get decimated. So, you know, the accounts of this in Plutarch and Appian are not super... are not super consistent. It's unclear kind of what the troop movements are. But at some point, things turn out to not go well for Spartacus's army. They decide to flee to Sicily, and they make a deal with some like Cilician pirates to take them across the, what is that, Strait of Messina maybe, to get to Sicily. But guess what? You can't trust pirates. Here's the problem.
What?
Here's the problem if you're a no-status slave making a deal with pirates. They can just sell you out. So the pirates just take the money and run. Or
are they Maltese sail? Pirates? Because that's, you know, that's
is that
who
the
you
worst
watch
kind
out
of
for.
Is that the worst kind of pirates?
Well, it seems like they have the shortest distance to sail to Sicily.
That seems a little racist to presume that the Maltese would be the worst.
I mean, the anti-Maltese racism isn't the biggest concern have in America.
Ask
today.
Ask Pete Buttigieg what it was like to be a little Maltese American kid growing up in. Iowa, Indiana? Hard to say.
Yeah.
Impossible to say, really, where Pete Buttigieg grew up.
There's no, you and I don't have access to.
100 years after his life, someone finally wrote about Mayor Pete and his interest in trains. Let me see, the Cilician pirates, their strongholds were on the coast of Turkey.
Yeah, okay. That makes more sense. It's a better run.
They might stop in Malta to plunder. Or
yeah, I bet they did
get a falcon. Anyway,
I said the other day. Oh, you know what? I think we should go to every island in the Mediterranean.
I mean, you can't even go to the Greek ones.
Well, there's you can't do many. That. But I mean, the big ones.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry, the big ones.
Where do you stop? Well, Cyprus, Corsica, Sicily, Sardinia,
Malta, Crete.
You done there?
Well, Corfu's not an island. Oh, no, it is.
It is, but I don't know where. Like, Crete is really the only Greek island that's all that big, right? Is Corfu big?
I mean, Corfu's bigger than Seattle.
A lot of islands are bigger than Seattle.
Maybe not by that much, but Cyprus. Did you say Cyprus?
I believe I said
Cyprus.
But
looking it up, going through the, you know, the blogs.
That's how you do travel research?
Yeah, like, tell me more, blogs.
I would open an atlas, but okay, go to the blog.
No, the consensus among bloggers seemed to be that Malta was the undiscovered...
Malta is the place to go?
Cool spot. They were like, you know, Cyprus and Crete, those are fine.
You know where
Rhodes,
you know where I've always wanted to go in Malta, which is kind of weird? The fake town that Robert Altman built for his Popeye movie
right.
is dilapidating in Malta somewhere. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's like going to Hobbit Town, except... yeah,
except it's in really bad shape. It's full of some kind of awful crab that will swarm you and kill you. Anyway, so after the pirates
stabs,
we were talking about how the show maybe should be called Anywho. Anywho, after the pirates stab Spartacus in the back, not literally, he gets cornered in southern Italy. He is decisively finally defeated by Crassus's men. All the historians agree that he dies in that battle, although maybe some say his body is never found.
Mm.
So it's maybe some, he's still out.
Force Ghost.
He's Tom Joad. Yeah, Force Ghost, exactly. You're going to have fat Spartacus coming back, holding a big turkey leg. You would not believe the eats they have here. And of course, the ending of the Kubrick movie is taken from the actual histories. There were 6,000 survivors of the uprising that were taken prisoner and then were all crucified on the Appian Way back to Rome. 100 miles of dead slaves.
Man, just, that's a drag.
Just to remind you, if you're a slave, especially, maybe to... keep your head down and don't go stealing kitchen knives.
I mean, look, I'm not the Gen X guy that's going to tell like millennials, hey, could be worse. I mean, I know you can't make a down payment on a house. You got all these student loans, but
at least
100 miles of crucified rebellious slaves.
What's the most number of miles of crucified bodies in your town? It's got to be less than 100.
That's right. Even in the highest rent districts in San Francisco and Seattle, there's, I bet, not a single crucified person.
Now, the weird thing is, it's always been kind of my vague idea that these are kind of fusty, corny movies, these toga epics, and I've never been that, even like neoclassical paintings kind of bore me. If somebody's wearing a toga, I'm like, nope, what else you got?
Well, how did you feel about The Life of Brian?
Well, that's a very different thing, isn't
well,
it?
Well, but I mean, did you respond to the...
I think the jokes are funny, but I'm not like, ah, here I am, back in the Mediterranean... of 2,000 years ago. I will say I did not appreciate it as a sweeping historical epic, no.
But I mean, did you recognize the tropes that they were exploring? Because yeah, there's a lot of trope mockery.
But a lot of them are biblical films. But I guess you're right. There is overlap. You're right. And a lot of these movies that came out in the 50s were explicitly biblical. You know, yeah. John Huston made an adaptation of Genesis, and there was that awful Jesus biopic where John Wayne plays the centurion. You know, all the big stars make cameos like it's Around the World in 80 Days.
But when you said the conservativeness of them, like it's sort of masked conservative porn.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even masked. They're, you know, all of them are very God-fearing. Like the explicit message of many of them is...
The Lord comes in a burning bush.
Yeah, I hope our characters accept Christ.
Right.
Even if they are from godforsaken Malta. But the funny thing I recently learned, particularly about the story of Spartacus, is that I guess I knew the movie stuff, but like before 1960, before Kubrick's movie comes out, Spartacus really had one trope, one purpose in world culture, and that was to inspire the Soviet proletariat.
What?
To inspire an international workers' uprising. And I think I found this out accidentally when I was looking up, I don't know, I'm sure I was trying to write some trivia thing, and I was like, are there things named Spartacus? And that's when I found out that to this day, there are 6 soccer teams in Russia named for Spartacus, which was more than I was expecting.
Yeah, right.
I think the expected value for me would be 0 Russian soccer teams named for Spartacus.
But I see that he is a champion of the worker.
You can see where it comes from, right? There's 12 to 15 more soccer teams named for Spartacus in the former Soviet sphere, Hungary over to Tajikistan or something.
Well, now that you mention it, of course, the Soviets, or the Russians rather, always saw themselves as an extension, like the Roman Empire, the last surviving Roman Empire, right? They saw themselves as the inheritors of the Caesars.
Yeah. I see. So if you overthrow the Caesars, the Tsars.
That's right.
That makes you like
Spartacus,
a slave, a gladiator hero of antiquity.
Yeah, that's the analogy.
Yeah. And I just remember being mystified when I saw this. There's to this day, there's a dozen sports stadiums in Eastern Europe and Russia named for Spartacus. Like what? Like how did this, it just seemed like incomprehensible to me. I was mystified.
When you say it in that tone of voice, it certainly sounds mystifying.
You think if I said it in a different voice, if I was like, and as we all know,
yeah,
there are 15 soccer stadiums named for Spartacus, you'd be like, well, of course.
Yeah, if you had brought this up in the context of a different show where as, you were like, oh.
As we all know,
yeah, the
all
Spartacus Russians,
the biggest teams. Soccer stadium in Kyiv is probably named for Spartacus to this day.
Yeah, I'd be forced to pretend that I knew that already.
I had never heard this. And I started to dig into it, and it was surprising. I mean, it is exactly what you're saying. He is a working-class hero, literally in chains by a rich upper crust of society.
Right.
Who, through his own, class consciousness and superior qualities.
That's what it is. He is a hero of the Soviet Union.
And this was recognized, before the Communist Manifesto, like just him as a working class hero, like Toussaint Louverture, who led the Haitian Rebellion around 1800, he was often called Black Spartacus.
Oh,
which is a pretty badass. I would see that movie, right? Black Spartacus.
So, first of all, I can't believe there isn't a movie called Black Spartacus, or a rapper at least. But second, so it was not the Soviets; it was pre-Marx. It was early 19th century?
There's definitely an undercurrent of people remembering Spartacus as kind of the guy from, because back then there are no universal references except antiquity. You know, Greece and Rome is kind of what we've agreed upon, and the Bible, I guess.
Right. And there really weren't many instances where anybody was freeing the serfs
You have Moses in the Bible, I guess, to the degree that slavers in colonial America actually put out a new version of the Bible that like cuts out Moses freeing the slaves because it's going to angry up all the enslaved people.
Angry up yourself.
And so, yeah, and they don't want that. So they leave in all the stuff in the New Testament where Paul is like, do what your masters say. It's really awesome. That's God wants it that way. Otherwise, why would he have made them masters and you not masters? So they left all that stuff in and they cut out all the angry making slavery in Egypt stuff.
But yeah, when you think about it, the UK or Britain outlawing slavery was an early 19th century innovation. And prior to that, was there ever an instance where anyone outlawed slavery? I mean, outlawing slavery and freeing the serfs is only 200 years old.
Probably.
Prior to that, there was never even... never even considered except by some.
Even if there's, I bet historians can think of isolated cases and we would like to hear them, but it certainly wasn't a cultural trope, you know?
Right.
Like all you've, today we have all the heroes of throwing off the literal chains of chattel slavery in this continent. So you have Nat Turner and all the rest. But back then.
You're looking for.
Yeah, you got to go back 2,000 years.
Yeah, Moses and Spartacus.
That's all you got. And so there's enough of that in the water that Marx is aware. And I guess there's an 1861 letter we have where he writes to Engels that Spartacus was the most splendid fellow in the whole of ancient history. Great general, noble character, real representative of the ancient proletariat. Which is kind of funny to me that he's just listing off these great general, noble character, no notes, you know. Marx loved Spartacus.
Well, he's compatible with Marxism. Thank God we haven't had a character in a long time.
We've never had one with an actual like cover blurb from Karl Marx, like two Engels, no less, being like, you know who's compatible with me?
Yeah.
This guy. So I guess kind of on the strength of his appearing, Marx doesn't write much about Spartacus, but there's enough of a sense that he is the lone working man who took up arms and rose up, that when left-wing revolutions inspired by Marx begin to happen and movements begin to coalesce, Spartacus becomes a symbol for that.
And how much of the Spartacus story is retconned during this period by Soviet realism?
A ton, as we will find out. Like the version of Spartacus that gets soccer stadiums named after him you know, east of the Warsaw Pact nations is
remembered for hammering swords into plowshares.
It's not, yeah, it's not something Plutarch or Appian would recognize. So we'll get there. And this begins it with in 1914 in Germany, where Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht and other leftists in the Social Democratic Party of Germany become unhappy with, I guess at this time, World War One has just started. As they said, hey, look, World War One has just started.
Yeah, right.
And that's what they
would say. Let's form a fifth column.
Well, they were, the Social Democratic Party of Germany, the leftists felt was insufficiently anti-war.
You know, did they protest vote for Nader?
Exactly. I mean, it's essentially that. It's like, well, maybe I'm not going to vote for Biden. And they formed an offshoot party, which they called the Spartacist League. So okay. Literally like the Spartacusian League.
But not the Spartacus League, the Spartacist League.
Well, they're Spartacists. Yeah, you know, we're followers of Spartacus.
Right. They're the Decemberists.
Exactly.
The followers of December.
Do you feel like there should be an indie rock group called the Spartacists?
Except they'd spell it wrong, like the Decemberists spell it wrong.
Decemberists. And in fact, what became the Communist Party of Germany, which was turned into a huge force in Weimar era Germany, real workers movement, is the Spartacist League. Like they,
oh
yeah, Rosa Luxemburg is you know, there's no bigger name in you know, left-wing figures of that period.
And you know, I've surely read this 40 times in 40 different books, and I was just like, Spartacus.
I think if I saw Spartacist League, I would think about Sparta or something.
Yeah,
you know, like, okay, right. they've got the rigorous soldiers of Sparta.
That's exactly what I probably thought.
But when the hard C of Spartacus turns into a soft C, you kind of lose the connection.
You rip it from your letter sweater.
Taking the letter C from his varsity sweater. So Lenin praised the Spartacist League. And you can see why they are reaching back. You know, if they want historical antecedents to their movement, because that was Marx's claim, not just that we need to rewrite history. It's that all history has always been a story of class struggle.
Right.
And that might lead to the inconvenient question, please show your work, Karl Marx. Like, right. In what ways was antiquity the story of class struggle? And those stories did not get written. So what you're left with is Marx being like, well, duh, Spartacus.
Yeah, exactly.
So he kind of becomes the poster child of, yeah. Like, this kind of revolutionary thought has always been happening. Check out, you know, if nothing else, check out Spartacus. Then after the Russian Revolution happens, you know, Bolsheviks take power, the Caesars, the last Caesars are gone, and they need iconography. You know, the Soviet Union it's not a nation that has ever existed before. It's inventing its symbols from the whole cloth. And at first they have Alexander Pushkin, you know, the 19th century Russian poet. He's kind of the symbol of he's the spirit, the national spirit, but he's not pan-Soviet. He's particularly Russian.
Yeah.
You know, Armenians and Kazakhs are not going to flock to the banner of Alexander Pushkin.
Well, that was the problem with blonde girls in head kerchiefs carrying like sheaves of wheat. It didn't really resonate with the Kazakhstanians.
Yeah, when you think about Soviet art, I think it's grappling with this problem. Like, who is not purely Russian, and who do we got? We don't have a deep bench. We're a brand new movement. So you get, you know, muscular men with sledgehammers.
Right.
And, you know, and women on tractors.
It's fascinating to watch
the common people.
Socialist realism
people.
Or Soviet realism evolve, because after they really started to feel like they're job was a global movement, you'll see these murals where that's like a UNICEF.
Suddenly there's an Asian person and one black person.
And they're like, no, this applies to everyone.
That was the dream. That was the goal, world revolution. And so needing a new bench of symbols when you don't have one, a lot of times they would just go with these kind of common man, anonymized, we're all the hero thing. But people like statues, you know?
They sure do.
And, you know, the mistake that got made often was, well, it'll be, you know, we now associate leftist art with big heads of Lenin and Stalin and Mao, often installed by Lenin, Stalin, and Mao. You know, it was people creating their own cults.
Or the citizens of Fremont, the nuclear free zone.
So in this case, in 1918, Moscow sends out a list of approved monuments. These are figures who can be on monuments in our new Soviet nation, and one of them is Spartacus. There have been previous, you know, he's a not unfamiliar figure in neoclassical art. You know, he's often muscular and nude and, you know, ready for action.
There have been Spartacai.
There have been many Spartacai, or Spartacide, perhaps. Uh-huh. You can always kill him with some Spartacide. That's probably what Crassus did, just to spray some Spartacide all over Vesuvius. And what has already happened, just to duck back a little, is in 1874, there was an Italian novel called Spartaco, which kind of brought his story to life with kind of a Garibaldian 19th century revolutionary enlightenment vibe. You know, he becomes an Italian coded militant.
Sure, of course.
And this book has really caught on in revolutionary circles. So, you know, every library in the new Soviet Union has copies of Spartaco. Everybody's reading Spartaco. It becomes a play in 1920 in Odessa. In 1926, they make a film. These are all called Spartak, interestingly, like, because that's the Slavicization, Spartak. The film sadly does not survive, so we don't really know what their take on the Italian novel Spartaco was. But in Lenin's speeches of the 20s, Stalin's speeches of the 30s, sometimes Spartacus is quoted, is cited specifically by name as a guiding light or a beacon of their movement. Stalin loves Spartacus, you know, maybe not a point in his favor, but spoke glowingly of, you know, how the revolutions of antiquity have all been leading to this moment, you know, like, we're the result of 2,000 years of struggle. Think about Spartacus.
Right.
And as you've already hinted, that's a bit of a retcon, but let's run with it for a second.
Sure.
This catches on in a big way. Streets and squares and hotels in every big Soviet city start to be renamed for Spartak. Spartak Lane leads from Spartak Square to the Spartak Community Center. We're going to put in the Spartak Swimming Pool, Spartak Stadium, where the Spartak, you know, and a lot of these never got decommunized because, you know, in the 90s, once the list came out of, hey, if something's named after Stalin, it's got to go. Spartacus,
sure,
you know, his connection with the movement had, you know, it was always multiple degrees of Kevin Bacon or Kirk Douglas, I guess, in this case. And so nobody was too troubled about, well, we got to rename all the soccer teams in Hungary that are named for Spartacus.
Well, did anybody convert Spartacus into a hero of the like oligarchic recapitalization of the new Russian Federation?
I don't really think that has happened.
Like, did they say, yeah, we've overthrown our gray suited masters?
I mean, it's a couple paragraphs in Plutarch. The weird series of circumstances that had to happen for that to become a symbol of a 1920s political movement seems unlikely to be repeated,
right?
In the 90s or 2000s, although it did happen, as we'll see, in the late 50s, early 60s. But you know, you have to remember that Spartacus was a popular baby name. People were naming their baby Spartak, and perhaps their kids were Spartakovich.
So we're talking about boomers. A boomer baby or greatest generation.
Soviet greatest generation babies. And then probably boomers. You know, the fact that it was naming basketball and soccer teams well into the era of the invasion of Afghanistan, you know, makes me think that it was still a symbol in the back of people's minds, and you would see statues and postage stamps and murals.
Do you think that there are Gen X Russian kids named Spartacus?
There could be. They would be kind of among the youngest.
If you are listening to this show and your name is Spartak,
yeah,
please write us.
Thank you for learning English and probably emigrating. And maybe there are super patriotic Russians who listen to this show and think we're just joking about Putin.
I mean, I bet you there are Ukrainians that do.
I mean, Ukraine inherited a lot of this. There's places in Kyiv named for Spartak.
Yeah,
they inherited their. The old Soviet maps and policies, just like we did,
just
like Moscow or St. Petersburg. Us, not so much. I've mentioned the soccer teams, which is how I kind of stumbled across this. But that had to do with specifically Spartacus being a gladiator.
Yeah,
he was a professional athlete, and so if you're looking for something to name your soccer team in Novgorod or whatever that city is called. Novgorod. Novgorod. So he's an obvious answer. So that's why he became the symbol of Soviet athletic talent as well.
And so I have seen his image in bas-relief on many Soviet things and just never put together that it was Spartacus.
If you've been outside any field or training facility, you probably saw Spartacus art.
I just thought it was the new Soviet man.
I thought there was a muscular nude man, because of course, why wouldn't there be?
Right.
And you appreciated that on its own merits, as we all would.
Hey, it's a comely figure.
Second to no one in your appreciation of muscular nude men. But, I mean, it was to the degree that when the Soviet Union originally opted out of the Olympic Games after the Bolshevik Revolution.
Oh, for how long?
I don't know. They didn't come at least, I think one or two Olympics they skipped. And the idea was, this is the West's decadent games. We need to show our superiority with the workers' games. And so they started a workers' Olympics called the Spartakiad.
The Spartakiad.
So we had the Olympics. They had the Spartakiads, named for, of all people, Spartacus.
And were the events like harvest wheat.
It's like, let's do the sickle throw.
Survive on 500 calories a day.
They should do them every 5 years, right? Instead of every 4 years.
That's right. It's a 5-year plan.
That would be the Spartakiads.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And so this became a new Soviet academic discipline. You know, like, not every area of historical study was welcome in Stalin's Russia, I'm sure you can imagine.
That's right.
But, you know, a Marxist take on antiquity was always welcome. And so there was a lot of Spartacus research. And this is kind of where we get into the problems you alluded to, which is, you know, Russian historians at the time were writing these long things about newly discovered evidence that Spartacus actually had specific social programs in mind. You know, like, of course, Spartacus would have collectivized agriculture.
But it's interesting, because that was an era of archaeology. So were people actually finding scrolls in Turkish hinterlands, or was it just all?
No, I think this is no claim of new evidence. I think this is Soviet-style propaganda.
Right.
Like, as we all know, it's clear that a revolutionary leader of this kind must have had ideas about the collectivization of agriculture. And the problem is that there's no evidence that Spartacus was a social reformer of any kind. All of his actions seem, except for the one time he had south, it gets cornered in the south. All of his actions are consistent with a guy leading a slave army that just want to get out of Rome.
Right. Marauders who are headed.
Yeah. Can we get to the Alps?
Yeah.
Can we get to Sicily? Can we get somewhere where we are not slaves? And the writers we have from a century later kind of disagree on what Spartacus wanted. And there is a lot of like, no, he was a threat to Rome. He was going to march on Rome. And that may just be the paranoia of people in Rome who are like, you know, like watching Fox News and being like, Portland is burning. When is Antifa coming? When is Antifa going to come to
Oklahoma?
Yeah, to Dayton, Ohio. And it may have just been that, you know, there doesn't seem to be, and nobody makes any claim that Spartacus was going to upend the social order in any way.
Well, he wasn't really referenced until 100 years after the fact. So it couldn't have been that great a threat.
Yeah, if people were really thinking, boy, and then we came within a second of becoming a slave-run democracy, whew!
Right. Somebody would have written it down. The Romans, kind of famous for writing things down.
They were among the few who were. So it's possible that it seems most likely to me that he's not actually a Toussaint Louverture figure, except in the sense that he's, slashing his masters and burning down Whitey, which is, you know, we're all for that. But he's more of a Harriet Tubman figure. You know, he just wants to, like, get on the road and get out of there. he's escaping. But again, this was not the Stalin era take on him. He had to be a good leader of the proletariat. Now, the relation of Spartacus to, there is an intersection of Spartacus to left-wing American politics here that movie nerds probably know. The reason why the movie of Spartacus exists is because in 1950, an author named Howard Fast was jailed by the House Un-American Activities Committee for 3 months for contempt. He refused to testify, and he had good reason. He was absolutely a communist, wrote for the Daily Worker for decades. Interestingly, later, I had heard of the guy, but did not know that he ended up, I think he was Erica Jong's father-in-law. His son married the author Erica Jong, and today the pundit Molly
Jong Fast
is Erica Jong's daughter and Howard Fast's granddaughter.
Wow.
Which I, years of seeing her on Twitter, had no idea. So while he's in prison doing his 3 month prison term for not testifying in front of HUAC, full of left wing Bolshevik fervor, he writes a novel about Spartacus, really bringing the story to life in the same way that this Garibaldi era guy did in Italy.
Right.
He's gonna do it for the modern American working class.
And we know Kirk Douglas.
Left-leaning. Unlike Charlton Heston, Douglas was Isser Danielovich, Russian-Jewish upbringing. Still very, patriotic and was always doing Voice of America stuff about, democracy is, the greatest freedom, arsenal of freedom, blah, blah, blah. Loved America, don't get me wrong, but was a lifelong Democrat, unlike a lot of these 50s actors. And he was pissed off that he did not get Ben-Hur. He was,
right.
He was, the leading oiled down muscular guy of his time. He and Burt Lancaster, I guess, he thought he should have got Ben-Hur. And when Charlton Heston got the part, he was mad. And he knew that, these were the movies that were making all the money. I think he had his own production company. And he thought, I need a sword and sandals epic of my own with lots of, something gladiatorial. If I can't have a chariot race, what do we got?
Well, now I'm wondering, when do I get my sword and sandals epic?
You think it's one to a customer?
Well,
you don't really have a Kirk Douglasian physique, no offense.
No, that's true. I mean, I'm more like a Zeus than, like a lean Spartacus. I'm more like a chunky Zeus.
So
Wouldn't you agree?
So you could be like, yeah. So you, okay. So we cut to you in Olympus.
Yeah, throwing lightning bolts down.
Like Laurence Olivier in Clash of the Titans.
I've had many people say, why haven't you been cast as the villain in a movie? And I go, yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
If somebody said that to me, I'd be like, oh, no.
No, I feel like I am the villain in a movie. The one that's like the guy who's like smart and lays on some heavy thing.
You could be in a Miami Vice episode.
No.
Yes,
I'm saying
absolutely.
Like some kind of thing where, you know how sometimes spy bad guys are like quirky and like kind of like out of shape and wear weird glasses.
You're a Bond villain.
Yeah, like a Bond villain. Exactly.
No, but I think you are the made for TV version. You're a Miami Vice villain.
Maybe I can win a daytime Emmy.
You and Miami Vice had Phil Collins, so
sure.
You can be a pop singer and fight Crockett and Tubbs.
All right. Yeah.
So back to Kirk Douglas, who, by the way, is an icon in Culver City where I spend a lot of my days. So there's a Kirk Douglas theater. I stay in a place that has a mural of Kirk Douglas outside at some time.
Why Culver City specifically?
I don't know if he lived near enough or just poured money into cultural institutions there. I mean, Culver was always, it's where the MGM studios were and their huge back lot. It's where, even back before that, in Silent Times, I think Hal Roach had his studio there. So if you go to a Keystone Cops movie or if Harold Lloyd is hanging from something, it's probably in Culver City.
I mean, the time that I've spent in Culver City, it really resonates as the cultural center of the region.
Well, the funny thing is, it used to be kind of dead in a weird little, why is this its own city in the middle of LA? And it's actually, they've done a great job. It now has a nice walkable downtown.
I haven't been there in a while.
There's always live music in the plaza, whether you're trying to sleep or not. There's food courts and a Salt and Straw and a Trader Joe's and an Erewhon and a Shake Shack.
I feel like most of LA, it seemed like, there's sidewalks and stuff, but there's also six lanes of traffic and people going 85 miles an hour.
They took lanes out of the main drag through Culver City to put in bike lanes, walking lanes, and a big plaza. And now it's a nightmare at rush hour. But that's a win for urbanism.
Right. They Seattle-ified it.
They did. The light rail went through, and now there's, I think, HBO and maybe Apple are over there.
nice.
So it is kind of a boom town.
I should have bought that trailer park when I had a chance.
It could be your face up on murals next to Kirk Douglas. You'd have to have a little, like a hole in your chin.
Roderick City, they should have called it.
Anyway, he is bummed about losing out on Ben-Hur. He has a VP in his production company says, well, have you read Spartacus? And he gives him Howard Fast's novel. Kirk Douglas loves this and then finds out that Yul Brynner is already developing a Spartacus movie called The Gladiators.
Also a very oiled person.
Another oiled person thriving on. I mean, maybe that's why that was the preferred genre of movie, because Hollywood was full of wide-shouldered, shiny guys.
Yeah, shiny guys.
So Yul Brynner's project does not have the rights to the Howard Fast book.
Good.
So Douglas is like, I'm going to buy the book. We can call our Spartacus, and maybe we can get out ours ahead of Universal or whoever's making the Yul Brynner movie.
I'm rooting for him now.
Yul Brynner, by the way, is pissed and is, you know, he's shooting this movie off in Turkey or something and is facing weather delays and realizes that he's not going to be first to market.
Right.
So Howard Fast, so basically Kirk Douglas is in a hurry. This movie needs to beat Yul Brynner to market because you can't have bald Spartacus.
Well, no, but...
Well, you can.
But wasn't this a time when gladiator movies were thick on the ground? Was there any reason that...
I think two Spartacus movies in the same season might be a bit much.
Oh, right? It was kind of like two Saturday Night Live sitcoms that debuted at the same time.
Or Armageddon, Deep Impact. It's a Ants Bug Life scenario. So you want to be first to market. And Howard Fast is asked to write a screenplay of his own novel, and Douglas finds it unreadable. You know, it turns out getting this like very doctrinaire Marxist to try to adapt this for the screen is not making for a real lively cinematic experience. And now it's all hands on deck, and pre-production has already started and they don't have a script. Douglas is so desperate.
He just improvs the whole thing.
That's right. A lot of people don't know this. All of Spartacus was improvised. Like that one guy who says, I'm Spartacus, he just forgot his lines. He thought he was Spartacus.
I am the Batman.
So the famous thing that happens that changes Hollywood history here is Douglas is so desperate and, you know, left-leaning enough to feel like this is the right thing to do that he goes to no less than Dalton Trumbo.
Oh, there we go.
Blacklisted screenwriter, one of the Hollywood 10.
Working in secret.
Back in the 40s, a bunch of screenwriters and one director and a producer refused to testify in front of Congress during the Red Scare as a result, which is totally legal, but right. It was also... apparently legal for the studios to conspire and as a conglomerate say, we will just not hire these guys anymore.
Although Dalton Trumbo won 2 Oscars for screenplays during the time when he was writing under a pseudonym.
Yeah,
right?
I think he won for maybe the Brave one, but it's like, yeah. Oh, look, John Stone is not here to pick up his Oscar. What are the odds? And Dalton Trumbo adapts Fast's work. Howard Fast hates it. I think they were kind of... there was some leftist schism then that meant that those two did not get along.
What a surprise. Leftist schism.
That never happens in 20th century America. And finally, Douglas kicks Fast off the project and has Trumbo write the screenplay.
Whoa, that's anti-revolutionary.
Well, it's a big deal because he later pushes to get Trumbo credit. It's now been over a decade since the Hollywood 10. I think
this is 1960, right?
Yeah. I mean, the movie comes out in 1960, and I think Trumbo thinks Kirk Douglas correctly thinks I have the pull to do this. It's like Clooney being like, not a lot of people can write the editorial that might get Biden to drop out, but I'm George Clooney. I'll give it a shot.
Right. And Sinatra saying, you're going to let Quincy Jones into the casino.
Well, that's a little different because, if you say no to that, you will get shot by...
Oh, right. By Frank Sinatra's buddies.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. Like if you're famous, maybe you can get Willie Mays into the hotel or something. And in this case, Douglas's gamble is correct. The time is right. Universal backs down and puts Trumbo's credit on the movie. And there are protests. You know, people notice that a red is back on the screen and the American Legion pickets the movie.
Oh.
But it's 12 years later. And
the American Legion.
they really picked the right cause. Don't go to Spartacus.
I'm dying at the thought of the 1959 American Legion, like, rawr, rawr, so mad.
Well, the funny thing is when you have this context about Leninist, Stalinist Russia, I mean, they're not wrong. Like, this is actually 100% in line with the goal of leftist propaganda at the time.
Sure.
You know, rise up against your rich, your pampered masters in the city, you know, like you do have nothing to lose but your chains. I think President-elect Kennedy goes to see Spartacus in defiance of the American Legion pickets.
Probably without a hat on.
Yeah, because the person behind him would be angry.
He did both things at once.
The person behind him in the theater is like, JFK, take off your hat.
Well, so that didn't do much to dissuade the American Legion from calling Kennedy a communist.
No, I mean, but I think it was a sign that the winds had changed. You know, the Eisenhower era was over and the blacklist had officially broken. So that's kind of, you know, on this side of the Atlantic, that was kind of the lone, that's kind of our lone remaining association of the Spartacus myth with progressive or socialist politics.
And in the movie, is there a lot of retconning about, I mean, it's just all...
Less so, but it's still written by Trumbo. Right. And like the American Legion, you know, on some of the merits maybe was not wrong. Like there is a lot of pro-worker, anti-capitalist messaging in Spartacus.
Right.
Probably more than, say, The Robe or Demetrius and the Gladiator.
So compatible with Marxism, but incompatible with not taxing the rich.
Right. Okay. Compatible with Marxism, but also compatible in a friendly way that the president-elect can go to.
Yeah, I get it. That's right.
And it gave Stanley Kubrick his career. It's not a particularly Kubrickian movie, but Western director Anthony Mann had dropped out very early. I think the Russians looked bad. He was kicked off. Kubrick suddenly gets a chance at a big budget movie and it changes his career.
He's a young guy.
He never looks back. Yeah, he's already directed Paths of Glory and
Killing. He's got a Kirk Douglas like fascination.
Yeah, I think that's why I think Douglas knew him from Paths of Glory and he's like, this guy's really smart and good. Kubrick gets on, so that's how he gets on this big budget movie. It's got studio distribution, but it's kind of a Kirk Douglas production company passion project.
A joint.
Yeah, it's a Kirk Douglas joint. And so you don't get 12 soccer teams named after Spartacus, but you also don't get The Shining and Clockwork Orange.
Well, it seems like a fair trade.
Without Spartacus. So there's something for everyone.
Yeah. But, you know, you had to endure Eyes Wide Shut.
There's actually Eyes Wide Shut reappraisal going on. Are you not here for Eyes Wide Shut reappraisal?
Well, I hadn't been following all the latest rushes on Eyes Wide Shut being actually good. What's the reappraisal?
That it's actually good.
Huh.
I'm still waiting for the Braveheart.
Not so sure.
Braveheart reappraisal.
And that concludes Soviet Spartacus, entry 1194.EX2116. Certificate number 37084 in the omnibus. Futurelings, just like Spartacus, social media also died an inglorious death.
It's crucified on its way to Palo Alto.
And yet may still exist in your era in the way that Spartacus's memory lives on. If so, as a sentient blanket of kelp or a Pacific garbage patch that has gained self-awareness, you can search for us on Facebook, Instagram, and everywhere. And apparently Ken is going to be on Instagram soon with a hijacked Ken Jennings avatar.
I don't know. Some corporate version of me. It'll all be AI.
Yeah, and you can search those places for at Omnibus Project, and there are things. Also, you can find us individually at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick. I sometimes now will post little things on Threads just because I miss getting comments to the effect of, well, actually, the American government is a dictatorship or whatever it is that I need to be explained. I have explained to me by someone much younger. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. And in particular, do not email us if you have a complaint. Go to the Futurelings site on Facebook and register your complaint with our many apologists there. But there are also many people that will that will fight to have us unseated, even though they listen to every episode four or five times. They also want us to be crucified on the Appian Way.
Even that guy on the Apple Podcasts app who thinks we're too racist against white people, even he gives the show 5 stars.
Well.
But then he's like, but why do they hate the white race?
I agree. I agree that we
are. You should
are,
get 5 stars for hating the white race. Yeah,
we hate the white race, and we have five, and the show's worth 5 stars.
That deserves many, many stars.
Yeah. Well, also just the general informative nature of the show and the sort of chatty bonhomie that we have.
I mean, that's fine too, but face it, most people come here for one reason, to hear about.
To hear you opening the mail.
To hear the white man put down.
You can mail us things at P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington, and it's unclear what the current zip code is. I think you should send it to 98133.
Well, here's the problem. Somebody appears to have sent this. I think I caused a problem.
Yeah.
Somebody sent this to 98153.
And yet it made it.
But somebody had to cross it out in the postal service and put 98155.
So what you have done is infuriate some Shoreline post office workers.
Yes.
Who are like, oh, my God.
Listen, 33 appears to work. 55 appears to work. But it doesn't mean you can just try 53, Sharon from Grand Forks.
We had a whole system. We had a whole basket of that we reserved for Omnibus Project. And now we got to run around the store. Find him sitting over here, sitting over there.
I think Sharon is the one who thinks I'm insufficiently vocal in my love of North Dakota.
What did Sharon say?
She sent me a postcard about London.
Did you notice that the...
From North Dakota.
That the envelope has the Union Jack on the inside?
I did. It's
pretty fancy.
It must be one of those fancy ones that you go to Papyrus and it comes with the card.
And what does it say?
Do you call the store Papyrus, by the way?
I have never heard of it, and I don't call it anything.
But if you were in a mall and you were like, this place appears to have greeting cards.
I would say Papyrus because Papyrus sounds like a papaya.
Yeah, they do. It's true. They don't have papayas there.
Didn't we always say papyrus until recently?
No. I think you said papyrus on the Comic Sans show, and people enjoyed it. It's the new Solviet.
Oh, because it's actually pronounced papyrus?
It is papyrus.
Oh, that's terrible. It's always been papyrus to me.
Okay, this is confusing. Somebody has sent us a little box that says Ghost Express and maybe has a little guy peeking out, but also it's sealed with wax.
What is Ghost Express? Is that a game?
I'm trying to open it, but wax is getting everywhere. Oh, wow.
With wax.
Well, now it's even more cryptic.
Sealed with wax.
Here's a message from a ghost who died in 1863. This is not actually written on this piece of paper, but it's actually punched out of it. The letters are holes in the paper. They're negative space.
But those are letters?
Yes.
They just look like punches to me over here.
Well, you're too far away. I mean, the ones you can see are probably the P's and the O's where it's
right, all
punched out.
What does it say?
This ghost letter is a troublesome poltergeist who died January 22nd, 1863, perhaps in the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Likes music, dislikes technology. If you died in 1863, what is technology to you? The
rifle.
I really hate the
Gatling gun.
The steam engine. Yeah, the Gatling gun, probably. Maybe that's how he died.
Oh, you know what? The submersible. Like the the Merrimack and the Monitor.
These will never catch on. I hate ironclad warships. And then there's a little corked vial with apparently some of the ghost's teeth.
Oh, dear.
And then a cryptic kind of True Detective looking glyph.
Like a glyph. What are we now being haunted? What are we meant to do with this information?
Oh, wait, sorry.
Maybe is there an accompanying
letter? I should have opened these letters first. There's number one and number two.
Okay.
This package is over a year. Dear John. Oh, maybe Dear John is to you and number two is Dear Ken to me. Let's find out. That is correct.
Okay, give me the letter that belongs to me over here.
This package is over a year late, but I blame the new
baby. That's my letter.
Merry Christmas 2022, but everyone's going to hear it at the same time you do. Mm. I had to acquire this illegal item from overseas. I hope you love it as much as I loved learning about you two. Do you think it's illegal because it's got human teeth?
Yes.
What countries will let you procure human teeth? And they're adult sized, I think.
I think they're cadaver teeth.
They are not baby teeth.
He or
best
she?
He. And if you're wondering about why he doesn't is not concerned about sending human teeth through the mail, it's signed Best Mark the Libertarian.
Mark the Libertarian.
The laws should not keep.
Mark the Libertarian, who is a sovereign citizen, has sent us ghost teeth.
And then here's my letter. Dear Ken, This is the more libertarian one. The utility of the gift exchange is maximized when the recipient, not the giver, dictates how capital is allocated. See, we need to have billionaires controlling.
I'm not sure I see.
Christmas 2022 for Mark. And to put his money where his mouth is, knowing that the recipient should dictate where capital goes, he has sent me, but not you, a $100 bill.
What the what? Guy, kabukada!
I have turned around on libertarians.
Oh my God.
Their policy now seems very sensible and coherent.
But he doesn't say that I should receive the ghost teeth. He's given...
Maybe it's implicit. I mean, there are two teeth, which is nice. Do you want the big one since I got a $100 bill?
They seem to be in a jar of mouthwash.
Yeah,
like it's
scope.
Scope.
Isn't that what you would put? I don't know. I really don't want to uncork it.
Well, no, I don't think you should.
Are you okay if I don't uncork this?
I think you should not, but I don't know what the glyph represents, and I also am very curious how you're going to allocate this $100 now that you're the big money guy. Capitalist.
I want to go to ghost.express.
Wait, did he say Merry Christmas 2002?
2022.
Well, what is that? That's
this. Apparently, this mailing was belated by a new baby he has. First ever libertarian to have sex. That's exciting for
him. Interesting. Congratulations.
Here's the website where you can send somebody a ghost. And this is exactly what we are getting. We got a ghost. Oh, it's not always teeth. Look, you can get like a creepy old key. This is just stuff from your basement.
Shin bone.
It doesn't. Not all of them appear to be medical waste.
Is
nice.
I don't remember libertarians being like also
into the supernatural.
Like, yeah, spiritualists.
This is a new thing. A kind of a mystico Rosicrucian-o libertarianism. Hmm. I'm very into this.
Yeah.
And I might have change for 100. Nobody has cash anymore. But look at this. All those people that sent us $20 bills are looking pretty paltry right about now.
Well, when you pulled it out, I didn't even recognize it as 100. It's been so long since I saw one.
What exceeds the generosity of a libertarian? Perhaps nothing.
Hmm.
And then there is one more thing here. Oh, wait.
Is that a vinyl record?
Oh, have I been confused the whole time? Did he send... Okay, I got this wrong. Sorry, Mark. The number one and the number two were actually with this package, not with that one. Never mind.
Okay.
The ghost arrived on its own, and we will never know. We will never know which kind. We will never know which kind listener sent that.
Wait, the ghost has no connection to the libertarianism or the
$100 bill. No, sorry. Wow. I need to retcon all of that. That must have been very confusing for Mark. What?
He's like,
how did my package change in transit? No. I just misopened these all at the wrong time. No, Mark actually sent us a $100 bill to me and then jointly a copy of former Omnibus Topic. The Gray album Danger Mouse, the Jay-Z Beatles mashup
that we
talked about.
We can put it up on the wall next to the copy of Mr. Rogers' Won't You Be My Neighbor that we have.
Didn't somebody also send us like American Eye by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers or something?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Well, we can add this to the Omnibus vinyl collection. Mark, I apologize for for attributing you to the ghost teeth. But thank you for the mashup record.
I should also mention that you can support the show and, dare I say it, should support the show.
Moral imperative.
At patreon.com/omnibusproject. Now, Mark has sent us $100, which is awfully good of him.
It is. He really should have just given to the Patreon, and then he'd have all the bonus episodes.
I'm sure he already does. I'm sure the $100 is a libertarian bonus.
It's like a tip.
Yeah. I'm sure as he lowered the incel flag.
Libertarians are great tippers.
Yeah, exactly. They feel like, I should support the...
The government shouldn't be raising the minimum wage. I should be giving lavish tips to servers and barbers. That's what they all say.
But there are so many reasons to support the show at patreon.com/omnibusproject. I feel like maybe foremost, you get the show on Tuesdays ad-free. And so you're going to maybe... This is for those of you who want to miss my frequent ASMR readings of our ads.
Do you not want off-putting ads? Go to patreon.com/omnibusproject.
So go to patreon.com/omnibusproject, and I suggest pledging at $10 a week.
Yeah, or just send me $100, and I'll be in charge of giving John some of
it. Yeah, exactly.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.